Welcome back to season 6 of Sister Brunch. Our podcast is here to uplift while bringing awareness to Black women and gender expansive people that are thriving in the industries of television and film. I am Fanchon Cox. I'm the producer and host of Sister Brunch.
And I'm Sean Pipkin West, also known as Pip. I'm a producer, director, and your co-host for Sister Brunch season 6. Thank you for tuning in. This week, we have another phenomenal Black woman that's going to speak about her journey in the creative space and her unique path as a storyteller herself. Our guest is an award-winning writer, director. She's been a member of the Directors Guild of America and Writers Guild of America, DGA and WGA, for more than 25 years and is a co-chair of the DGA's Disability Committee. She's worked on numerous projects, including Do the Right Thing, Daughters of the Dust. Daughters of the Dust.
Oh, no.
Sister Act 2, House Party, Hocus Pocus, Sneakers, and many, many, many others. She was a staff writer on the X-Files spinoff and wrote and directed Statistically Speaking, starring Alfre Woodard and Gary Marshall. I forget that Gary Marshall also directed. Oh, I mean, also acted as well.
Wow. Me too.
So, Sister Brunch family, we are so excited to welcome Nandi Bo.
Hey! Woo! Glad to be here.
We are so glad to have you, truly. I will say that this you and Sean, for me, are the OGs of Sister Brunch, because I met both of you at my very first one at Anya's house, and I still look up to you both so much as role models of everything I want to do and be in the industry. So truly, this is 6 seasons in the making to have you on, Nandi. I'm so glad. So Nandi is a Howard University alum, has been a creative in Hollywood for over 40 years, also lived in Africa, worked on films there as well. You may have heard of a few of these, like Mandela and Cry Freedom. Will you please, Nandi, share your journey from graduating from Howard, working in Africa, all of these different things you've done. Tell us your journey, and especially how you ended up also being a disability advocate, wherever, as far back as you want to go.
Well, I went to Howard, just like you say, and I started off as an actor. A lot of people don't know this.
What?
I started out as a drama major.
Okay.
And one semester in, I could see that there'd be people pirouetting around the School of Fine Arts hallway, and I'd say, who's that? They're like, oh, that's so-and-so. They graduated a couple years ago. I'm like, oh, okay, who's that? They graduated. And so very quickly, I realized that in 1980, which is when it was, there weren't jobs for Black women as lead actors. Mm. And a lot of the people who were graduated had nothing to do but come back to Howard and hang out in the hallways. Mm. So I decided I wanted to make roles myself. And Howard had a wonderful television station at the time. So I transferred really quickly to the School of Communications. The one person my mom told me to look up when I came to Howard was a woman named Sharon Robinson, who had been a midwife with my mother, who's a midwife. And she also happens to be Jackie Robinson's daughter.
Wow.
And so that was my one little contact in D.C. And so I would babysit for her sometimes and hang out with her sometimes. And at one point, I did a summer internship at WETA. And I lived in her house for that summer. And I heard her talking on the phone one day. And she turned down a job to work in Africa. At training nurses and midwives. And then when she got off the phone, she said, do you think your mom would like to do this? I was like, yeah. And so anyway, long story, my mom got that job in Africa. But anyway, I graduated, and Sharon, the same Sharon, said, well, you might want to work with my friend who's a first AD on the film that Sidney Poitier is directing. And I was like, absolutely.
So, you might want to. You were like, yes, I might want to. I might want to.
So I wrote a letter to her friend, Candace Allen, who was living in Germany at the time. I was like, I'm graduating. I did the whole thing. And she said, oh, I remember when I was your age. You know, it'd be great if you could be on the film. Well, I thought that meant I had a job on the film. So when people are like, what are you doing after graduation? I was like, oh, I'm going to go to New York. I'm going to work on the film that Sidney Poitier is directing. And people are like, oh my God, that's so great. And I was like, yeah, right? Well, I go to New York. nobody calls me. I'm sitting by the little rotary phone waiting for somebody to call. Nobody called. And finally, I called Candace. I was like, nobody's called me. She said, oh, well, we must be staffed up already. I was like, what? And she said, you can come down and volunteer if you'd like. I was like, okay. And call time was 7 o'clock downtown somewhere. And I thought, that's awfully early. I thought, I'll go around 9:30. I mean, after
no. you two now ADs are like, no.
I said, I'll go around 9:30 because I was going to have to take the train. I wanted to go after rush hour. I put on my little cute pedal pushers and my little pumps and came downtown, and they were shooting in the police station. They blocked off stuff. It was New York City. And I was like, hi, I'm here. And she looked at me and she was like, okay, go lock something. Like, she just sent me down the block.
Yes.
Well, they gave me the job that nobody else wanted, which was to call into the production office every half hour to take messages, give messages.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so you have to have your little notebook. You had to have like a handful of quarters or dimes, whatever was happening then. Yes. And stand in the phone booth. And,
wow.
And take messages. But by the end of the day, I had ordered film. I had ordered wigs. I had made reservations for Sydney's dinner, whatever. I had done all the things that you do when you're being that person. And so everybody knew me because I was the person like, ask Nani to call, whatever. So at the end of the day, the second AD, his name is Roger Pugliese, he said to me, he said, are you getting paid? I was like, I don't think so. He's like, you're getting paid. I was like, he said, are you coming back tomorrow? I was like, yes. He's like, okay, see you tomorrow. And then he called all the other PAs aside and had a private meeting with them. And I was like, well, how come he's not talking to me? But then I just sort of stood on the side and waited so I could walk to the train with some of them. And afterwards, I said to this PA, I said, what did he say to you guys? He said, he told us if we didn't shape up like you, we were off the film. I was like, oh, okay.
Whoa.
Okay.
So then weeks, days go by and
you start showing up on time. Now,
well, after that, got it.
Yep. Right? You were like, okay, let me.
And so the script supervisor, who was Black, because Sydney had a lot of Black crew on the film, probably as many Black crew as I've worked with were on that film. Oh, and the script supervisor let me stay at her house one night when we were shooting Night at her hotel room. And she said to me, she said, the second AD said that if you can get to L.A., they'll hire you in L.A. So I lived in Oakland at the time. So when the company moved to L.A., I lived in Oakland. I took the bus every week.
No.
Every Sunday, I would take the overnight bus to the bus station. I wash up in the bus station, take a cab with my little $350 salary, take a cab to the set, and then I would stay with a different crew member every week. So I stayed with the hairdresser. I stayed with the costume designer. I stayed with the script supervisor. I stayed with the first AD, who, Candace Allen, I found out recently, was the first Black woman in the DGA.
Oh, my.
So that was
what?
My...
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Is she still around?
She is still around. She's not working. She hasn't been working. She always wanted to be a writer, and so she's kind of... I think she's concentrated on writing, but I think she did 2 or 3 films for Sydney.
Oh my goodness. I feel like we need to do a bonus episode with the two of you.
Yes.
So she was so meaningful to you you became.
And she and Sharon Robinson were both sort of two Black women who kind of like they sort of helped me on my path. Oh. And so I worked on another film in San Francisco that summer, just as an office PA or something. And then my mom offered me to go with her to Malawi, Africa. And I'm a traveler. And so the US government would pay me, would give me a business class trip home if I stayed at least 6 months.
Okay.
So I went with her to Malawi, which is a small one horse town country. And I, after a couple of months, I thought I was going to jump off of something because there was nothing to do there. There was one newspaper, no TV station, one radio station, mm-hmm. is a totalitarian government. Mm-hmm. Women had to wear dresses below their knees. It was very different than anything I'd done. Mm-hmm. And a new friend there said to me, "You work in film." He's like, "You should work in, they're making films in Zimbabwe. You should go there." And I was like, "Okay." And that was a neighboring country. I didn't know anybody in there. He's like, "You could stay with my cousin. She lives there." So we didn't have a phone at the time. So I had to go to the hotel. I didn't know who was making films in Zimbabwe or where. So because I had worked on the Sidney Poitier film, I remembered Columbia Pictures' phone number. I called Columbia Pictures, but I had to like go to a hotel, get them to place the call, blah, blah, blah. Yes. It takes like a half hour. Yes. I called Columbia Pictures. And I was like, "Can you tell me the number for Variety?" So like the receptionist looked up the phone number for Variety. I then called Variety and I said, "Who's making films in Zimbabwe?" And they told me it was Canon Pictures. I called them, they're in Israel. Then I called the Zimbabwe people. Obviously it was very hard. So eventually I just decided to go to Zimbabwe myself, just to go to the production office and try and get a job. I got to the airport. The airport in Harare was an airport where you could just hang out and drink and eat. The people who were picking me up, they had been drinking and eating. Mm-hmm. So the mom says, "Well, can you drive?" I was like, "Yeah." She's like, "Good, you're driving." So I had to drive my little stick shift with the wrong side of the road and whatever. I turned up. I worked on King Solomon's Mine. No, I worked on Quartermain, which is a sequel to King Solomon's Mine. The job I ended up getting was a job. The guy asked me, he's like, "Why would you just show up and think you could, you know, get a job on day one of shooting?" I was like, "Well, I figured if I came too late, you would have already hired somebody." Uh-huh. Like me. "If it came too early, you wouldn't know you needed me yet. So here I am."
This is also brilliant, Nandi. I'm just like,
crazy, right?
Assertive and confident and everything we want the girls, the young girls that listen to this podcast.
And that's why I'm telling this story.
I love it. Okay.
No, that's why I'm saying, telling all of this, because, you know, in retrospect, it looks easy, but I want you to know, like, you know, I did all the things. And my first job in Africa was sitting on top of a hill and being a transmitter. Somebody would tell me what they needed and I would relay it out of the valley kind of thing.
Wow.
And I didn't even know about the, the military, what do you call it? The military alphabet.
So the phonetic alphabet.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Like Alpha Bravo Charge. Yes.
Okay.
So I would be like apple, banana, pizza. I was like, I didn't know there was like words that everybody
words
else
that
knew.
Yes.
So after a while, I figured out that it was not apple, banana. So I put it on my little dashboard of the car I was sitting in. And that was my job. And I never got to the set on that job because my job was on a hill in a car. People were bringing my lunch. But anyway, I worked on that film, and that sort of led to the next film, which was with Andrew Stevens, funny enough. And you know, I can't even think of his name. Davis.
Nandi, real quick, I just want to stop and just for all of our listeners and viewers, just the talk about your initiative, number one, right? Just calling people out of the blue.
Yeah.
And also just how technology has changed, right? No one had cell phones.
You using dimes and quarters.
You're using, you know, dimes, quarters, you know, calling the office. Like the fact that people just waited for information. You know, like, oh, they haven't called yet. We have no idea what's happening on set because the half hour phone call, like that to me just boggles my mind because we all know information is instant right now. Like people want to know right now what is happening. What's your excuse? Are you in the hospital? Are you bleeding? Okay,
Wow.
I love that. And the initiative, you slept on crew members' couches.
Yep.
Like I just
picked up to move to another country, let alone another city, another state. But you picked up and moved to Southern Africa. I'm like, the And you knew what you wanted to do, even yes. if it wasn't fully solidified, like which role, but you knew you wanted to work in this medium. And so you were like, let me go find where the jobs are. I have to say too, I just quickly say that my mother was also a midwife. And I know when you said it, and she worked in Zimbabwe too. So she did midwifery in Zimbabwe. She was there just for about 6 months. But something that I love about what Black women do in this industry, no matter what your role is, we are midwives for stories, right? Indeed. We are delivering birth. We are part of the birth team. We are the doulas, right? Yes. And so to have those seeds planted for you around what does it mean to give birth to something, right? That's what we do. Yeah. That's what we do. So anyway, I just had to share that. Hi, this is Fanshan, and you're listening to the Sister Brunch podcast. You can support Sister Brunch by following, interacting on Instagram at Sister Brunch Podcast. You can leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. You can watch the full video episodes. You got to see our guest faces. They are so gorgeous. So you got to watch the full episode on youtube.com/Trujillo Media, TRUJULO Media. And you can always watch highlights on TikTok at Trujillo Media. Oh my gosh, we could spend the whole time on your story. We could spend the whole time on your story. I have to ask about, so I'm going to fast forward to Do the Right Thing because it is my all-time favorite movie. And I've talked about it on this podcast this season, as a matter of fact. It is truly, I've seen it 14 times. It is truly, it's my all-time favorite. So I have a couple questions about that. And then I know we should move to our next segment. And then, but Sean, if there's anything you want to ask specifically about Nandi's work, but can you tell us a little bit about working on Do the Right Thing, how that happened?
Well, the things I love about that story is I was on a film called Lean on Me, which was Morgan Freeman. And I was on that film. I was a set
classic. Another classic. Yep. Yes.
And I was working my butt off again. And I always like being by camera. Like a lot of people like being in base camp. They like being whatever. I wanted to be where it was happening. That was who I was. So whether I was set PA or first AD or whatever, I was always right there. In fact, I resented paperwork. I mean, it was one of the things you have to do as an AD. But to me, the point was making the film. Mm-hmm. But anyway, one day I get a call from Brandy Fletcher, who was an assistant director, and he wanted to interview me for Do the Right Thing. And I interviewed with him. He offered me the job. And so I told my boss, Dwight Williams, who is an African-American first AD who I'd worked with a number of times. I was like, Dwight, I said, I was offered a job to work on Do the Right Thing. He said, I know, I recommended you. I was like, oh. Okay, so it's okay if I go? He said, absolutely not. I was like, what do you mean? He said, I recommended you with the good side of me, but I'm not going to leave you. But anyway, eventually he let me go to work on Do the Right Thing. And so that was my first job in the U.S. as a second AD. And it was all of the things. It was amazing. It was crazy. It was hard, but it was fun. It was all of those things. So ask me any questions about it.
Well, the opportunity to speak to somebody who was physically there, I felt like that, just that. It's like, you know, so I do want to make sure we talk about, since we talked about your journey, but where things are now, because you are a writer and director, and I especially, you know, you've talked about being a PA and a first AD, but also you're a director. So I also want to see if you give you the opportunity to talk about being a director as well.
Right after Do the Right Thing, I was working with, all of the, Spike is one of his big talents is getting lots of people together. And so one of the young people on the film was a man named Abdul Abbott. And he was a boom operator, or he was like maybe the cable guy. He was like, we're all young. And he lit my short film that I was using, my first film that I was using to apply to AFI with, because I knew I wanted to direct. And so I got into to AFI with that film. And what was your, remind me, well, where we're going with
are
this.
Are you directing now? Are you writing now? Well, I want,
okay,
yeah.
So hopping forward, so I worked and worked and worked, blah, 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 but always knew I wanted to be a director. But the tricky part is once you get into the Directors Guild, then you start making Directors Guild money and people start hiring you to do that thing. And I was an AD and I was a good AD. And so it's hard to kind of get off the train. So yeah. I had the directing, which I always knew was what I wanted to do. But then I have this other thing that I do well. And I thought, as an AD, I thought, I'll be with directors and I'll learn how to direct. I've worked with Richard Attenborough. I've worked with like loads of awesome directors, Spike and Reggie Hudlin and Julie Dash. Like, I've worked with so many amazing directors, and I thought that was great training to be a director. But of course, there are two different sides, yeah, of a puzzle, being ADs and being a director. They complement each other, but they're different skill sets. But anyway, I finally got into the director's program, the ABC directing program, which is a program where they help you shadow other directors. And this was in 2008. And in the meantime, I also thought, I want to have everything. I want to have children. I want to have a husband. Mm-hmm. I want to have a life, because a lot of ADs, they sacrifice so much. Mm-hmm. And so I have three sons that I had. I was pregnant and all the things. I finally get into the program and I have some downtime because there's a strike going on. And I took that time to do a physical. And I'd been having symptoms over the course of my life that were questionable. But, you know, as an AD, unless you're dead, you're at work on time, ready to go. And so, you know, you need to be bleeding or dead to miss work. But otherwise, you're there. And so I found out I had MS. And that was just, you can see from my story, like, I was one of these people who was unstoppable.
Go, go, go.
And MS just made me, like, it just knocked me off my stride. It knocked me, I didn't know what to do with that. It was so unlikely.
And Nandi, can I just interrupt, just so people, can you just talk, you know, multiple MS?
It's what multiple sclerosis.
Okay. And how, what you're, I'm really interested because MS affects everybody completely different, right? Right. So do you, if you feel comfortable, do you want to talk about some of the symptoms? Like you said, you've had them for a while, but you just kind of, with the strike, made you slow down, and then you went and had a test or whatever. So do you want to go through that
I'll just briefly talk about it. MS is a neurological disease, and it affects your whole, I describe it as affecting your whole computer. So it can affect everything from your eyes to your balance, to your strength in your legs, to your bladder, to everything. Like, there's not a part, like, you're hearing all kinds of, like, every single part of you is affected potentially by MS or not. And when I was in Zimbabwe, I had what they call an episode, because at first when you get MS, you have episodes and then they go away, and an episode and it goes away.
Okay.
And then at some point it becomes progressive MS, where it just gets worse and worse. And so when I was working on Cry Freedom, I was having episodes where I was falling all the time. But the Africans decided somebody had a spell on me. And I thought they did. So yeah. So it's kind of like these unexplainable things happen.
Right.
And again, as an AD, we don't get sick. We don't do that.
Yeah.
So I just would ignore it. And so when I finally found out I had MS, and then the first thing they tell you is don't be stressed. And then, you know, that makes you stressed.
Right.
And don't be depressed. Depression is another MS thing. And then that makes you depressed, the thought of being depressed. So my husband got a job offer in in India. And I thought, you know what, forget it. Can I curse about,
yes,
you know what I said? Oh, fuck it.
Like, yes,
all my life I've done everything I was supposed to do. I did all the right things. I haven't burned bridges. I'm good to people on set. I do all the right things. Like, how do I have this disease? And So I went with him and my three kids to to India for 3 years, to Mumbai. I thought, while I can walk, I want my kids to see some of the world. And I want them to know how big and beautiful the world is. And so I went there, and okay, again, you're in this place. It's crazy. It's hectic. I'm being a housewife, basically, because I can't work. And so I start writing, and I wrote a book called Hollywood to Bollywood. And just, well, and I didn't even know how to write a book. I got my son to count words in a book so I could know how many words, you know, so it turns out there's about, like, I think 80,000 words is a book. So, so I just would write chapters of our lives and now jump to the future. I came back to LA and now I'm, you know, when I, by the time I came back, I was closer to being visibly, affected with MS. And so then, you know, I couldn't work. I didn't want to AD because it's so stressful. So I kind of wanted to create my own directing opportunities, which was the writing. And eventually I worked on, I got some jobs as an AD, and on one of the jobs with Project Launchpad, they paid me so little. Like, I had never been paid that little in my life. Like, it was in one of the categories where they can pay you crap money, like they pay you hourly. And after working on that project, I was like, I am working this hard for this much money. I need to be doing my own stuff. So I just basically finished that job and finished my pilot. And my pilot script is about a woman like me, named Nandi, like me, who moves with her family, like I, who gets MS and moves to India with her family. And Tiffany Haddish is attached to star in it. She had been a stand-in for a project, Jess Jordan, that I AD'd on for a couple of years. And so I knew her that way. And Frank Spotnitz, who I went to film school with, is the EP. And
don't burn your bridges. Don't burn your bridges with those relationships. That was 35 years ago.
That was 35 years ago.
Yes.
And Frank Spotnitz created the Medicis. He created Men in the High Castle. He ran Chris Carter's company for 10 years on X-Files, wrote the X-Files movie, co-wrote the X-Files movies. And then the Brandon, Sonia and Brandon Margulis are my co-showrunners on my show. And Brandon is African-American. He's a writer. And he was working on, I think it was SWAT. I don't know which series he was on, when there was a terrible accident and his leg was taken from the bottom, the knee down.
Mm. Oh, that was LA's Finest. LA's Finest.
Yeah, that. Yes, you're with right. You're right.
Gabriel Union and Jessica Alba.
Yep, he created that. That. So that was the show he created, and on that same show, he lost his leg. And so I was with
that.
I was referred to him by one of my old bosses again, Ellen Schwartz, who was the first AD on Hocus Pocus. She was first AD on Frankie and Johnny. So, like, I do not burn bridges. And she, one day, she's like, you need to know Brandon. And so I met Brandon, and I told him what I was doing. He's like, well, I want to be on your project. I was like, okay. So he's my showrunner. So we are in the midst of, we have a pilot script that we're getting ready to take out. So that's like fast forwarding to where I am now. We have a disability committee at the Directors Guild for the first time in forever.
Yes.
And so I was appointed co-chair by the president after the original provisional co-chairs, or David Netter was one of them. He stepped aside, and I took his place together with Nick Kopis and joined Rich Ramis. So I am trying, as you can see, to try and make something out of something. Here I am. I can hardly walk. I look, you know, I was, the Delaney sisters are my aunts. I always imagined I was going to be doing stuff like, you know, they were gardening when they were in their hundreds. And so, but here I am instead creeping around on a walker, being, people are calling me ma'am and doing all kinds of stuff like that. But I'm trying. to make something out of something. And so I, you know,
Nandi, let me tell you, you're not trying, you're doing. Okay. You're doing. There is no trying.
Only a Black woman could do all the things. We just took 30 minutes for a fraction of your story and all the things you just told us, plus the opportunity to tell the story about a Black woman raising kids in India. Please don't, Hollywood, please, I do not want to see another remake of you spending all your resources on remakes when we have this kind of story. I would give anything to watch this. But as Black women, a Black woman with a disability, it is we see what's before us. And you, as Sean said, I mean, my goodness, you're not trying anything. You are doing it. It's just that this industry does not appreciate in the ways that if they truly cared about making money, we have evidence. Look at the population of India. Look at all the people that watched stuff in India. That alone should sell this project. So I'm going to get off my high horse, but your project should be moving forward. It's
we're waiting, you know, Hollywood right now is in a tricky time, and so we've been just advised to hold on. We've had our script for a little while, and now I just got some notes recently, so I'm going to go and do a little bit of a rewrite. But I'm really looking forward to it. And I sort of, like, you know, at one point I asked Sidney Poitier for some advice, and he says, I don't have the words to say exactly what he said, but his point was, he said, you're going to make it. You're going to get where you're trying to go. He said, but just make sure you enjoy the ride. And it's tricky. It's tricky to do that, because when you're young and when you're trying to make ends meet and you're trying to, like, do everything, and it's hard to remember to enjoy the ride. But I think I really, like, people who know me, I've had my share of fun, certainly.
Well, Nandi, you've lived enough for like 10 lifetimes. Like, the experiences like, you've traveled to all these continents. You were an AD, you were a PA, writer, director. I mean, that is so amazing.
Truly.
Usually that's like about five people did that. You're one person. Yep. And you have done that. And I mean, just accolades. I just got to give it up to you.
Completely.
Like, this is amazing. And you're still doing it. You're still in the game. There are people that when they got that diagnosis, they would have just given up and been like, all right, here we go. But no, not Nandi.
Or they wouldn't have become an advocate for other people with disabilities as well. And I'm not saying everybody has to. I mean, I always think, like, ultimately why we do the work, I think about diversity work, right? The reason I do the work is because the creatives should not have to. Like, I'm doing that work. I'm talking to white people. I'm talking to cis men, all of that, right? So that the creatives can just create. We hope that that's what we can be. At the same time, we're in a place. I was just looking at the statistics on representation of people with disabilities, and I'm like, this is just, I mean, it's at near zero.
Yes.
When people with disabilities, adults with disabilities are 25% of the country, 19% of California alone. And I'm like, how are we getting away with there being zero to under zero representation? So.
Hi, sisters and siblings. We hope you're loving our guests this season as much as we do. And if you do, we hope you'll share our podcast with a friend by hitting the share button on this episode. You can also subscribe to the Trujillo Media YouTube channel to see all of our previous episodes. And by subscribing, you'll never miss an episode. And when you review us on Apple or Spotify, tell us what you loved about our guests, or tell us what you'd like to hear more of. All right, let's return to the fabulous Nandi Bowe.
You mentioned quickly at some point in this journey what you were getting paid, and we do like to ask our guests to share whatever you're comfortable with around salary, what you can get paid, and especially because we want to motivate and educate our listeners to know, in what cases can you negotiate, or, you know, what would scale be on a first AD role or a writing role, whatever you're comfortable sharing.
And also, Nandi, real quick, also, I would love, because you've been in this industry so long, to, if you're comfortable, showing the difference. Like, when you were on Do the Right Thing, what you made, and then what you were making on, you know, because also we, she's again, award winning, like what you were making on that award winning series you made and developing, like development, like payment, is there payment, all that stuff. So whatever you want to let our listeners know.
Thank you. I sort of like my first job, the first one, the one where I showed up late and cute, I eventually got, I think, 300 or 350 a week was standard in the 80s as a PA. Okay. When I went to Africa and got that film where I was sitting on the hill, they gave me 150 Zimbabwe dollars a week for that, which is 75 US dollars a week is what I was getting on that one.
Wow.
So then when I came back here and I was working on, when I worked on Do the Right Thing, that was non-union. And so I got $1,000 a week. I got my cousin who was in town. He wanted to be an extra. I got him on as extra and Randy put him on the Puerto Rican stoop. By the end of the film, they decided the Puerto Ricans were principals. So they paid him back pay from the whole film. So he got a lot more money than I did on that.
Look at that. I mean, listen, anyway. As former actors, same thing, Nandi, but I'm like, these actors be making too much money. Let's be real. And I'm not saying that they're not talented and they don't work hard, but like, again, when you talk about what the crew is doing and what these actors get paid, it's wrong.
Well, he is. And his job, he was on the stoop almost up. But anyway, good for him. I love
but
him.
But good for him. I'm really talking about the A-listers. This is and just so, ridiculous.
Okay. And then, so that was $1,000 a week on Do the Right Thing because we were non-union.
Wow.
And then when I got to be union, I think at the time, second ADs were making about $2,500. Or 2,300 a week, and but then they get travel expenses if they travel. They get per diem if they go on location. So it's a good living if you're young. I mean, I was in my 20s. I got into DGA when I was 25. So it was a good living. And then as a first AD, you make around $5,000 a week, maybe more. I haven't done first AD on mainstream shows for a while. All the work I do as a writer and a development person, I am not being paid for. So I live on goodwill. My husband, I do it on the side. All of that is sort of in the hustle. But as a Writers Guild member, once the shows get picked up, I'll have Writers Guild. Whatever the Writers Guild minimums are, and you can definitely look those up, Writers Guild minimums and Directors Guild. There's different tiers for Directors Guild depending on the level of the show that you're on. But as a first AD, you make around $5,000 a week. Might be more at this time.
Thank you. So helpful. I know. Sean, you want to do our Let's Talk Tech?
Yeah. So we're kind of... inversing here.
So I did.
No, that's fine. No, this is usually a fashion segment, but let's talk technology. Now we know how fast technology is changing, especially now.
When I started, I did handwritten call sheets. You had to have really neat writing to be an AD.
Oh my god! Do you happen to have an old call sheet that you wrote? We could like put that up on the video.
I wouldn't have it on me now, but I will if I come across it. I will
send it. Take a picture and send it. Yes. Even the fact that we can now take pictures with our phones, take pictures of the written call sheet. Yeah.
Yes. So yeah. So that's right. When you started, call sheets were handwritten in pencil or typed. Some of them were typed, right?
On a typewriter.
Call sheets weren't typed. Okay. I thought I've seen some people said back in the day they type their call sheet, but every show's different. Wow. But is there any type of equipment or software or anything that you use right now in the craft that you can tell us about or you would recommend for anybody?
You know, I have Scriptation because I know that that's what people use. I haven't had to use, and I have right now, I'm actually talking on an iPad because I got an iPad. When I got a little money together, I got an iPad and I got the Sling so that I could have it on set to use it with scriptation. But I haven't had to use it yet myself. So I can't talk a lot about it, but I definitely know that's one of the programs that a lot of directors use.
Yes, scriptation is great. And it's good for the environment too, because you're not going through a lot of paper, script revisions. We know they're endless. You know what, Fanchon? We might need to talk to them about sponsoring our podcast, because we talk about scriptation
a lot. So do. You know what is so funny? I was just thinking, too, we should do a bonus episode and have you walk us through using scriptation, like record the screen and
we should get somebody who does it really well, because there's a lot, like even those of us who know scriptation, the people who know it really well, it's like the difference between knowing how to type on your computer and knowing Word in terms of all the things that they can do. Mm-hmm, so definitely have
the shortcuts and everything.
Have somebody in who really knows it. And scriptation does like offer memberships, because another group I'm in gets like a year subscription to scriptation. So definitely talk to them.
Okay. All right.
We will.
Yes.
So this is something we're starting to wrap it up, Nandi. So this is a Sister Brunch signature question. So you've been to several Sister Brunches, right?
Yes.
So question is, imagine you're sitting down to a Sister Brunch and it's your younger self. So we're going to say early 20s. Drinking age. What are you both eating? What are you both drinking? And what do you tell your younger self? Your present day person and then your younger self.
Well, one thing I was going to say just as a joke is like there are lots of people I met along the way who slept their way to the top. And I would highly recommend that.
Hold on, rewind. Did I hear that right?
I just met people
say that. She really did. Who made it all the way because of how they got there.
Yes.
And we're going to have to put this one in an explicit episode. We're not going to be able to share it.
Well, wait, I just want to make sure that everybody is very clear about what you just said.
At some point when you're coming up, you have to decide who you're going to be. Like, are you going to go way? You going to go that way? And I know people, I'll put it this way. One of the PAs I worked with, I'm trying to do this right without, one of the PAs I was working with on Do the Right Thing, he broke his leg before we even started shooting because he was playing basketball with one of the actors. He went on to be a producer and had a great life with that actor. So my point is, I'm making a joke about sort of how you get there, but we all know it's about relationships.
Yes.
It's more than even skill, and more than, like, it was great that I didn't burn bridges. It was great that I know loads of people, but I know too many people to not have gotten some of the good
chances, the opportunities, the resources.
Right. And there is a skill I didn't have that. So that was one of the skills I didn't have, which is making my relationships into something. Now, you know, Alfrey was in my project that I did. Like a lot of amazing actors have worked with me. And, but there are other people who make the most out of their relationships and they do it in a way. And I don't know how to do that thing. So I guess I would tell my younger self, figure out how to make your relationships count for you in a way that keeps them honorable, but also like just be more directed.
Amazing. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because you don't want it to be a transactional relationship. So because those are never really good.
You want it to be
good.
Authentic.
Yeah. You want it to be authentic. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But at the same time, we're
picking up what you're laying down, Nandi.
100%. We know exactly. And 100%. And part of that also is that other folks feel comfortable after the relationship has been built and it's authentic. They feel more comfortable being assertive and asking for things.
Yes.
We don't. because we get rejected all the time. As Black women, we just saw a huge rejection of one of the most intelligent, well-qualified Black women on the planet.
Yes.
Well, of course it's hard for us to ask. You know what I mean? So I love this advice so much, which is, it's okay, and it doesn't have to, it's not transactional when it is an authentic relationship and then when we ask. And not to mention, we do so much. We pay it forward all the time. All the things you've done, Nandi, my goodness, all the things you've done for other people. And I will just say, don't use past tense when you're talking about where you are now.
Yes.
Because, you know, we know also sometimes it just takes a long time. And so you will get there. I'm fully confident. You have a beautiful story. You have the relationships and you have the talent. You're going to get there. You're going to get there.
This
but we forgot
so
the food and the drink part, because this is the thing, because when you said sleep away to the top, I was like, oh, we didn't even, our tequila must be your drink of choice. And we're going to just say y'all two already drank the tequila. And then that's the advice. So what are your food and drink for Sister Brunch? We do need to know that.
Let me think. I do have a bunch. I like to eat and I like to cook and I like to, I don't know. Let's just say mimosas. That's a good one.
That's
for brunch,
a good one.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Gives you a headache, but it's a good one.
Did you learn to cook in India? Did you learn Indian food?
I learned some cooking there, but you know, you have great people who cook really good food there. And the tricky part in India is people make this gorgeous food and then they don't have recipes. So you don't get the food if you don't invite them over. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
that's
the
best
part. Because
it's by taste, it's right, by right.
But I learned to cook in Africa as well. I love good food.
I love it.
I don't know. You know what? And this is I'm ready. It's getting to be gumbo season, right? So
yes. What do you bring to the Sister Brunch? What do you have a tendency? Do you have a thing that you tend to?
You know what I do, because I lean on the fact that it's all I can do to freaking get there. I bring alcohol. I bring sparkling wine.
Everybody brings alcohol. That's one of my favorite parts about the Sister Brunches. Yes.
And a big smile.
Yes. Love it. Nandi,
open heart. Nandi has a very big heart.
You do. We are so grateful to you for your work. We are here to support. We are here to cheer you on. We're here to help make those connections in the relationships. I always say, look back at all the guests we've had. It's 6 seasons worth. If there's anybody on there that you're like, oh, I want to talk to so-and-so, you let us know. That's what we are here for. And now there are going to be people that listen to this episode and say, I want to talk to Nandi Mo. And we'll say, we'll see. Let us check in. Make sure you will vet them before. But
I did have, like, I used to do this thing called Waffles and Wisdom with young African-American youngsters. And I used to say to them, and I'm sure I'm going to mess it up, but I'd say, you are who you are what you do, you are what you say, and you are who you share your blessings with. Mm-hmm. And beautiful. So, and I really believe that. I really believe that you have to look forward and look back at the same time. And you definitely have to sort of bring people with you, and you have to sort of really listen to the people who've come before you.
Absolutely. Oh, what a perfect segment to end this episode on. Nandi, thank you so much. This has been great. Like, we're going to have to bring you back, because there's much more to talk about.
That was part one of a 5-part series on Nandi's life.
All right.
Thank you, Nandi.
Let's give a hand to Nandi. Thank you. Thank you so much.
We appreciate your follows on Instagram at Sister Brunch Podcast, where you can also find your community of Black women and gender expansive people. We post different industry opportunities and keep you updated on past guests. Watch, comment, share, and subscribe. That's the key word, subscribe, to our videos at youtube.com/Trujillo Media. And we're also on TikTok at Trujillo Media.
Sister Brunch is brought to you by Trujillo Productions and was created by Anya Adams, Christabel Nsia Buadi, and Fanshin Cox.
Our producer for season 6 is Tasha Rogers. Sister Brunch is recorded on the unceded territory. Now, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you will hear that I've added some tribes to this, which I have recently learned are part of the tribes that were here, the indigenous people that were here. So, Sister Brunch is recorded in Los Angeles on the unceded territory of the Tongva, Chumash, Serrano, and Kiz peoples in Los Angeles. Thank you so much for listening, following, reviewing, subscribing, and we will talk to you next.